Thank you, Carla. Good afternoon, everyone. It's great to see all of you here in Vancouver. When we consider resilience, we think about financial and operational stability and demonstrating a disciplined approach to growth and long-term value creation through market cycles. This is anchored in a disciplined financial strategy and a strong financial position. To continue to deliver value for shareholders and sustain our resilience, we're focused on four pillars, each of which I'll speak to in more detail. First, maintaining our very strong balance sheet. Second, driving EBITDA and cash flow generation. Third, a disciplined capital allocation. And continuing to balance return to shareholders with value accretive growth. A strong financial position is at the core of our resilience. We've done significant work to position our balance sheet as one of the strongest in the sector. Since the close of the EVR transaction on July 11th, we've made significant progress in the deployment of the US $7.3 billion of transaction proceeds to the balance sheet and to shareholders. Overall, we've strengthened our balance sheet and we were in a net cash position of 1.8 billion Canadian as at September 30th. We have reduced our debt by US $1.5 billion since July, including a cash tender offer for US $1.4 billion of our outstanding term notes, repayment of $120 million US of short-term loans at Carmen de Andacollo, and open market repurchases of a further $9 million US of term notes. Combined with our semi-annual repayment on the QB2 project financing facility, we've reduced debt by over 2.3 billion Canadian this year. We have no term note maturities until 2030, and in the near term, we will continue to deleverage as the project finance facility at QB amortizes, including a semi-annual repayment in December of this year. We continue to assess other debt reduction opportunities, and we have approximately 400 million US of the proceeds of the steelmaking coal sale earmarked to reduce debt further. The quality of our balance sheet, along with confidence in our business outlook and a focus on lowering our financing costs, resulted in us reducing the size of our sustainability-linked revolving credit facility by $1 billion US to US $3 billion, and this facility matures in October of 2029. As part of our disciplined financial strategy, we maintain an average leverage target of 1x net debt to adjusted EBITDA through the cycle. And this leverage target will be negative in the short term as our cash balance is higher from the proceeds and will gradually increase as we deploy cash to shareholder returns and value accretive growth. Our resilient balance sheet, further supported by ongoing deleveraging, positions us very well to execute on our value accretive copper growth strategy. Coupled with our strong balance sheet, our portfolio of operating assets is expected to generate significant EBITDA and operating cash flow across a range of commodity prices. At 2026 consensus pricing, our base of existing copper operations, excluding QB, could generate $2.9 billion of EBITDA. With QB at full production and with the benefit of molybdenum byproduct credits, we expect to generate a further $2.2 billion of EBITDA. And our Tier 1 zinc assets will contribute an additional $0.8 billion of EBITDA, resulting in total potential EBITDA from our operations of $5.9 billion at consensus prices. Our portfolio remains resilient in a low-price scenario and provides significant upside to higher commodity prices. Our conversion of EBITDA to operating cash flow remains robust, with the potential to deliver on $4.7 billion of operating cash flow at consensus prices. Our strong cash flow conversion is underpinned by our low near-term effective cash tax rate, particularly at QB, where we don't expect to be subject to cash income taxes in the near term. We are committed to a disciplined approach to costs across our business. You've heard from Brock, Dale, and Shahzad earlier on cost discipline at our operations and the initiatives they are taking to optimize our cost base and increase productivity across our operations, all of which is critically important for our unit cost profile. Ian and our commercial team are focused on continued margin improvement through our commercial excellence strategy, and they continue to optimize supply chain and procurement strategies. Our new business structure, which supports our shift to a pure-play energy transitions metals company, simplifies our organizational structure, and we are optimizing our cost structure to deliver on our value creation strategy. We will provide further guidance on our unit costs and on our expected go-forward corporate costs as part of our normal guidance in January. We will continue to follow our disciplined capital allocation framework. When we consider the sanctioning of our development projects, each of them will have to compete for capital by proving they can generate strong returns against other uses of capital. We have confidence in the execution of our projects, as Carla outlined earlier, with a more disciplined approach, which will ensure our projects deliver the level of returns both we and our shareholders require. And we will continue to adhere to this framework, ensuring we strike the right balance between value-accretive growth and returns to shareholders. Should we generate cash in excess of our needs, we would consider the deployment of that capital, including to further returns to shareholders, as our capital allocation framework indicates. Since 2019, we've returned $5.3 billion to shareholders, with $1.8 billion of dividends and over $3.4 billion of share buybacks, all while maintaining our investment in the construction of our QB project. In 2024 so far, we've returned over $1.3 billion, including $928 million in buybacks through the end of October. And we have more to complete, with over $2.3 billion earmarked for share buybacks, which we expect to execute over the next 12 to 18 months, subject to regulatory approval to renew our normal course issuer bid. This is in addition to our commitment to return between 30 to 100% of our future available cash flows to shareholders via our capital allocation framework. And we've shown we can strike a balance between returns to shareholders and growth as we've continued to return significant cash to shareholders while building QB2. With the proceeds from the sale of our steelmaking coal business, our near-term copper growth projects are well-funded, and we have low stay-in-business capital requirements. As Jonathan outlined, we expect to deploy between US $3.2 and $3.9 billion over the next 4 years to bring our near-term growth projects of San Nicolas and Zafranal online, while also executing on the mine life extension at Highland Valley and debottlenecking at QB. The project capital attributable to these growth projects remains unsanctioned and uncommitted, and we will continue to be disciplined in our assessment and progression of these projects to ensure value-accretive growth. Our sustaining capital and capitalized stripping requirements from our existing operations, including QB, remain stable at between $1 to $1.2 billion annually. And we continue to invest between $400 to $600 million annually to advance our pipeline of copper growth projects and the possible mine life extension at Red Dog. Earlier today, Jonathan outlined the attractiveness of our lower capital intensity near-term projects, and Dale talked to the financial returns expected on these projects. These projects are also expected to contribute meaningfully towards our EBITDA generation potential. At consensus copper prices, we see a pathway to generate over $7.5 billion of EBITDA from our operations by the end of the decade. The impact of our strategy to balance copper growth and returns to shareholders is highlighted in the illustrative accretive growth potential on our per share metrics. With QB continuing to ramp up in 2024 and considering our current share count, following the significant share buybacks completed so far this year, we could increase our copper production per share by 45 to 55% compared to last year. As we stabilize QB at full production by 2026 and complete the remaining $2.3 billion of authorized share buybacks, our copper production per share could increase by a further 40 to 45%. As we bring our near-term copper growth projects online, our copper production per share could increase substantially. And this does not consider any further potential share buybacks that could be authorized under our capital allocation framework as a result of the strong cash flow generation potential of our business, which would further improve our copper production per share. Overall, through the end of the decade, our copper production per share has the potential to increase exponentially. Once again, our resilience is underpinned by one of the strongest balance sheets in the sector. We are in a net cash position of $1.8 billion. Robust EBITDA and cash flow generation from operations through the cycle further supports our resilience. At the same time, we remain focused on cost discipline, both operationally and at the corporate level, to maximize our margins and ensure that our cost base is optimized to deliver our value creation strategy. We continue to follow our disciplined capital allocation framework, which guides our decision-making, We will be disciplined in our investment decisions to ensure we can deliver lower capital intensity projects that are value accretive. And we will continue to balance this growth with returns to shareholders, with significant cash returns since 2019 and $2.3 billion of authorized buybacks remaining. And as I mentioned, should we generate cash in excess of our needs, we would consider the deployment of that capital, including to further returns to shareholders, as our capital allocation framework indicates. Our value accretive growth, combined with our significant share buybacks, has the potential to increase our copper production per share exponentially by the end of the decade, demonstrating our ability to deliver significant shareholder value. Thank you very much. I'll now hand it back over to Jonathan for closing remarks.